Hello and welcome to the Practice Drill Podcast, episode 35. This week, we discuss the Indigenous All-Stars versus Maori game. What a game it was, full of excitement and a bit of biff there late in the first half. Then we look forward to the Super Rugby Round 1 starting this weekend. Then the Aussie and Sri Lanka T20 series. And finally, for the final time, we discuss the Ben Simmons situation as he's finally been traded. Shout out to Sencho, as always, for providing that killer intro and introducing my good mate, injured tonight, will not be playing for the Fat Lambs tonight in the Balmain Touch Football, Blaze McKay. Blaze, how are you?
I'm very good, mate. Yeah, obviously missing the game tonight, but I think you guys will be all right without me.
Fingers crossed. So what have you enjoyed in the last week of sport? There's obviously been quite a bit, as we'll go through today, but what else?
Yeah, I we spoke about it last week again, but the Six Nations, I'm a bit of a broken record when it comes to my sport. I love my rugby union. So, you know, the French had a good win against the Irish, which could, I guess, be a really important game for, I guess, the final standings in that competition.
All right. And guys, if you'd like to stay up to date on all things NRL, AFL, rugby union, cricket, and NBA basketball, go and follow us on Twitter at @T_practicedrill. Sharing a lot of stuff there at the moment, guys. Really exciting with the All-Star weekend coming up in the NBA, and we've just passed the trade deadline, and in the NRL and AFL and Super Rugby, as we'll get into, those seasons are about to get up and running. But Blaze, let's get straight into it now. As I said in the introduction, we're starting off talking about the Indigenous All-Stars versus Maori game. The Maori side getting up 16-10, quite a low and close scoreline there. Nick Arima scored a great try along with Ethan Masters and Tarpany. Tarpany denied actually earlier in the game by Will Kennedy, a great try save. But what did you make of that game? It was an actual really solid performance by both teams, but it did look like the Maori side were just a touch smoother on the day.
Yeah, they were, and as you know, I think we both predicted the Indigenous side would actually get up, so it was a bit of an upset, I guess, in that regard. As you say, pretty low scoring. I think, you know, obviously it was quite wet out there, and obviously, you know, early in the season there was a bit of scrappiness in the play and quite a few errors. I think obviously the wet ball played a huge factor into that, but, you know, a huge amount of physicality, and I think that's always going to be expected from this sort of game, and that was probably reflected in the scoreline and also the closeness of the game throughout.
And also that the high physicality, it didn't really start off that way. One of the plays that I really saw was, Trindle, the halfback for the Indigenous side, gone for a bomb on his 50, and James Fisher-Harris was the contester and didn't put him down, and that kind of went, wow. Like, James Fisher-Harris, notorious for, you know, sitting halves on their backside. And that just showed me, all right, this is a preseason game. But then after that kind of biff, after the couple of penalties and reports and sin bins on Jordan Rapana, we saw the intensity kind of go up a notch, and that came along with the high physicality. And I think that's where the Maori side kind of got on top, you know. Naturally some bigger builds, and they just kind of brought it, definitely playing for culture, which I thought was great. Do you think that's what makes it better than the NRL All-Stars, that they're kind of playing for something that's, you know, arguably bigger than themselves?
Yeah, 100%. I think when that All-Stars team was originally, you know, created, it did have something missing. Obviously you still had the Indigenous side, who, you know, it was an incredibly important week for them, but I think you talk to any of the players and they talk about the week building up to it and getting to know, I guess, about your culture. I think there's a lot of players both in the Maori and Indigenous sides that maybe don't know as much about their family or where they're from as maybe they would like to, and these weeks are a really good opportunity to get in an environment where, you know, sharing that kind of stuff is really appreciated and supported. So I think, yeah, that culture is a huge aspect in this sort of game.
No, 100%, and to kind of add to your point, which I think is definitely what both these squads would have done, is, you know, when I was younger, my dad worked for this Indigenous company, and we went away on this camp, and you do, because, you know, I'm Indigenous, for those who don't know, you do really learn more about your culture when you are surrounded by people who also have the same heritage, and I think it's important for the players to know, you know, their heritage, and it's important for everyone, but they get a great opportunity with this game. And I think that's what you were saying before, that might have been what was missing when it was just the NRL All-Stars against the Indigenous All-Stars. And someone who is a proud Maori person, Jordan Rapana, the moment kind of got to him a little bit. Two shoulder charges at the end of the first half. First one was on David Fifita, which was just clean, clean shoulder charge. Didn't get him too high, which I think, you know, kind of helps his cause a little bit. Then there was the second one on Jesse Ramian, I think also helped by the low tackle of, I think it was Patrick Herbert. What did you make of those two? It led to a little bit of beef almost spilling into the first row. It was pretty intense.
Yeah, as you say, in those sort of moments, I think almost kick-started the game for that second half, and the intensity definitely went up a notch. I think those sort of moments, as you say, maybe got a bit carried away with all the passion, and they're probably moments that, you know, have the club coaches ripping their hair out at home, and now he's going to miss the first two rounds of the season. But, you know, having said that, that's I guess part of what we come to expect from these games. And as a fan, and as someone who's not very invested in Jordan Rapana's NRL season, I thought it was pretty good, and it's good to see that stuff. I guess as long as it doesn't affect your team, you're probably happy with it.
Yeah, no, I'm sure Ricky Stewart would be, you know, very disappointed in that, because Jordan Rapana, even through last year when, you know, Chance was out with an injury, he kind of stepped up a lot and really helped that team, whether it was at fullback or playing off the wing. So I think to have him miss the first two rounds when you really want a fresh start for the Raiders after, you know, what I'm sure they would admit wasn't an ideal season for themselves. So disappointing to not see one of the guns of that side playing in the first two rounds, as that's what he's been punished with, missing those first two. But I'm sure he'll just be even more pumped for round three, where they actually play the Gold Coast Titans, Dave Fifita. So let's hope he's not tempted to do it again. But finally, Joe Tarpany awarded man of the match. He had a great game. You know, just some of his highlights plays. He had a try assist. You know, that he did score a try as well. He also had a try disallowed where he was so close. I said that just when we were starting this topic. Will Kennedy with a great try save. He's scary, man. He's just really good and athletic, big as well. What do you make of his game?
Yeah, pretty incredible. I think he's, you know, that typical, I guess, Maori athlete that, you know, we love to see, and there's plenty of them in the NRL. As you say, huge size in the forward back, can carry really well, but it's also got some speed, footwork and skill. So, yeah, I thought he had a really good game, and hopefully setting himself up for a good season.
Well, now for the NRL, they look on to the trial games, and then for the season starting on the 10th of March, Thursday night footy. I think it's Panthers Manly, great game to start the season. I personally cannot wait. But we'll move on to the next topic. I'll let you take over. Super Rugby, how excited are you for round one?
Yeah, very excited. You know, they always start a bit earlier than the rugby league and AFL. So, you know, they've already been going through their trial game sort of process this last sort of month. And the first round's just this weekend. So the Waratahs will be kicking off the season against the Fijian Drua on Friday at Combank Stadium out at Parramatta. And really exciting. I think a bit of history will be made. You know, the Fijian Drua, new side, just started up this year. They're going to join, along with the Moana Pacifica, who are based in Auckland, two, I guess, Pacific-based sides. You know, something that's really important, I think, in both rugby league and union is the acknowledgement of these different cultures that add so much to the game. And for rugby union, I think, you know, the Pacific, there are so many players in the professional game that come out of those countries. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they can produce in their first year. I think it's going to be a big step up for a lot of their local guys to take that next step to Super Rugby, but they're going to play a really exciting brand of you know, rugby, and it's going to be interesting for them with the Waratahs first up looking to rebuild after a pretty poor year last season.
And I'm sure because the game's out in Parramatta and there's quite a big Pacific Island population out west, surely it's going to be a packed house for that opening game. As you said, it's basically history.
Yeah, definitely. There's a huge, I think, Fijian contingent out in Parramatta way. So hopefully they'll all be there getting behind their side. And I think for the Waratahs, it's quite a, you know, tough matchup first up, just because you don't really know what you can expect from the Drua side with them being a new team.
Now also the Moana Pacifica, is that how you pronounce it? They're also the newly added team, as you said, based out of Auckland. Their first game is against the Blues. I believe is that RTS's team?
Yeah, so the Moana team's actually unfortunately had some COVID in their camp, so that game's been postponed to a later date. So yeah, we'll have to wait till round two to see RTS. You know, we've seen him in a few trial games for the Blues, and he's looked pretty good. He's still obviously adjusting back into the Union game, but obviously played there during school, and it looks like he's going to slot in at that 12 position, which is going to be interesting to see. I think many thought that he might start out in the wing just to get himself back into it, but obviously he's carrying a bit of a bigger frame than when he last played rugby union, so he's going to be, I think, in there at 12 with a bit of ball playing and maybe some, you know, a lot of defensive work in there.
And are they going to go to him for some X factor, or because he's kind of new that he'll have to actually earn those stripes? Or what is coming out of the Blues camp that you have seen?
I think they'll definitely be looking to use him and all that his skills that he possesses. I think, you know, there's always a question about whether a few you can do both sports. And in reality, there's probably only a handful in rugby league and rugby union that can do both. But I definitely think RTS is one of them. You know, he was in that Warriors side for a long time, and you could see he was still in a struggling team. He was one of the best in the competition. So I think, you know, it might take him a few weeks just to get up to the level, but I think he could be a very exciting prospect for the season.
And any other exciting games besides those two? Well, I mean, the Blues games got postponed, but any exciting games for round one?
Yeah, one I'm looking forward to is also the Crusaders versus Hurricanes on the Saturday. Obviously, two big New Zealand franchises. The Crusaders are probably, you know, one of the most successful franchises in sport, you know, across the world. And the Hurricanes, you know, from Wellington, another big, you know, big city. They'll be going down to Christchurch, and you know, everyone wants to beat the Crusaders in the rugby union world. So that's going to be a huge matchup first up.
And how's it going to run this year? Because obviously they did that, you know, Australia plays Australia and New Zealand plays New Zealand, and then they crossed late in the season. How are they looking to run it this year?
Yeah, so I guess a little bit different, but then a little bit the same as well. This year the competition will all be just based off one ladder,
okay,
with the New Zealand teams and the Aussie teams in the same ladder with the final series at the end. But at the moment, because the New Zealand borders are still closed, without quarantine, so the Aussie teams to start off will just play each other, the Kiwi teams will play each other, and then The plan is from about round 8 or 9 they'll start to play each other. Yeah, but all one table, so it's going to be interesting to see where some of these Aussie teams can finish up.
Because we were addressing it probably at the start of our podcast, they were 0-10 after two rounds, so fingers crossed the Aussie teams can do a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
To start the 2022 Super Rugby season. But we'll move on to our next topic, which is the Australia-Sri Lanka T20 series. Now, tonight, Australia looking to secure the five-game series after winning the first two. So they're looking to go up 3-0. Aussies started off really well. They obviously won the first game in a weather-affected one where I think it was about a 20-run win under the Duckworth-Lewis system, and then they backed it up with a super over victory. So Sri Lanka's showing that they're competitive, but what have you made of the series so far?
I think the first thing off the bat, it's been quite a tough one to follow, just because, I mean, I haven't seen really much marketing about it at all. It kind of crept up on us, and I feel like that, yeah, there hasn't been, you kind of flick on the telly and you realize it's on.
Yeah.
So that's been a bit of a disappointing thing, I think, for this series. I think the Sri Lankan side, as you say, they do have a fair bit of talent in their side, as showed by that second game, but maybe it's just their consistency to back up game after game. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they can bring out in game three.
I definitely think the whole Justin Langer situation, which we spoke about on last week's episode, has played a part in the, not necessarily a lack of interest, but maybe just attention just being projected elsewhere. There's, you know, the Olympics on and you know, the Super Rugby and all that kind of stuff starting up. So maybe, you know, attention's starting to wane on cricket. But there has been some really good performances, and especially the two rookies, Josh Inglis and Ben McDermott, obviously have been great in the BBL for a couple of years now. Ben McDermott winning the BBL 11 MVP. But they seem to be settling into international cricket very well, both averaging 35.5. What do you make of their games? Obviously not the same type of player, but they're really showing in that top three the future of Australian cricket.
Yeah, and I think they're two, you know, very exciting batsmen to watch. Obviously, Ben McDermott's got a lot of power and hits a lot of sixes. Josh Inglis, on the other hand, is a bit, unorthodox with the shots he plays. He works probably a lot harder in terms of his running between the wickets, and he loves to, I guess, sweep and ramp. So he provides something different, but it's also very interesting to watch. And it's also good to see some new faces coming up. You know, as we said, we're coming off the T20 World Cup victory, and we've got another one this year in Australia. So it's really important that, you know, these guys keep fighting for spots in that team and keep the squad depth pretty high.
So, as we said, some young talent coming through, but the old veteran heads still playing well, and the main one is Josh Hazlewood. He's been the pick of the bowlers for the entire series through two games with an average economy of 4.17, just insane, and 7 wickets so far. He missed 4 straight games in the Ashes after only playing in Brisbane, and he's jumped straight back into it without skipping a beat. How good of a player is he? And what does this even mean for the tour to Pakistan coming up with Scotty Boland's position in the team?
Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible. Josh Hazlewood, the last few years, has really shown himself to be a quality T20 bowler, when for a long part of his career, he was a red ball specialist. So that's pretty incredible. And he also bowled that super over that you spoke about. Only went for 4 runs, and ultimately that probably won Australia the game.
Yeah.
So it's pretty incredible to see him. As you said, he's missed a bit of cricket, but he's straight back in there. And I think for the Pakistan tour, if Hazlewood's fit, he'll be in the side. Although, I guess Boland's played really well through the Ashes series. I think Hazlewood's reminded us, you know, that he's a quality player. And if he's fit, he's probably Pat Cummins' first choice as the captain. But then I'd say Hazlewood's number 2 in there.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's great to see Hazlewood bowling well, and he's got to be up there for one of the best T20 bowlers. He showed it in the World Cup, and it was good to see, you know, Mitch Stark playing well in the World Cup as well. But Josh Hazlewood, who's just a really standard textbook bowler, he just seems to be so hard to put away. You would think a bowler like him on the T20 level would just be that fraction too slow, like maybe, you know, 5 to 10 kilometers slower than what some of the vets of T20, like your Mitchell Starks, your Malingas of the past, who have really got up there in pace and relied on that to just be how they take their wickets. Hazlewood just relies on a good line and length and just makes the batsman feel awkward. But so far, my thing has just been how well Sri Lanka have played. I mean, they haven't had the results. A super over, you've got to take as a pretty good game for both sides. But they're showing some great fight, considering that they were in the playing tournament for the T20 World Cup, that first round where some of the smaller nations played against each other. And Sri Lanka are one of the best white ball teams ever, really. So to see them drop off and now they're kind of finding their feet, what does this say about their ability going into the future?
Yeah, I think it's always really interesting when you see these, you know, smaller countries play against Australia. Obviously, they're not in the limelight that often, but you see some players that, you know, obviously are real quality guys, but probably don't get the accolades that they maybe deserve. And I think Sri Lanka have definitely had that as well this series. Obviously, you know, with the bat, Nisanca starred, averaging 54.5, pretty incredible for T20 cricket. And then Hasaranga with the ball, you know, he's taken 5 wickets across 2 games. And he has a pretty different action, I think, really shows, I guess, where T20 is going. And, you know, people are coming in with different actions and different type of variations, which is really cool to see.
But wasn't that interesting that they chose him to bowl the super over, whereas Australia did go for, you know, the man of the moment, Josh Hazlewood, to bowl that over? It kind of shows that, you know, spin's creeping back into being the go-to in T20 cricket, and really, you know, if you have a good spinner, you can kind of, you know, win a lot more games than you'll lose. And we saw that with Adam Zampa. You know, started off the T20 World Cup kind of struggling to find his footing, but then as the tournament went on, he played really well and backed up the likes of Hazlewood and Stark and Cummins. Unfortunately for Sri Lanka, though, their go-to spinner has returned a positive COVID test. So he will miss tonight's match in Canberra. What does this mean for Sri Lanka? Do you think we'll just see them kind of be trampled tonight and maybe try and bounce back for that fourth T20?
Well, yeah, you hope that doesn't happen, but it is going to be interesting. Obviously, yeah, their top bowler's out, so there's four overs they're going to have to find from someone else. And I guess that's just the world we're living in at the moment. You know, I guess that's probably a statement that's been said hundreds yeah, of times over the past few years, but it is what it is, and they're going to have to figure out a way to I guess, keep going without him tonight.
So what's your prediction for the rest of the series? It'll be almost over by the next time we talk. Do you think Aussies just keep winning, go to 5-0, or do you think Sri Lanka are going to jag a game?
I think Sri Lanka will probably drag a game or two, just the nature of T20 cricket. Yeah. It means it's hard to, you know, win 5-0, I think, in a series. Hopefully for Australia, you know, some of those guys like Josh Inglis and Ben McDermott, like we spoke about, continue their form and keep pushing a case to be in the squad for that World Cup that's, you know, coming closer.
I think they'll definitely be in the squad, but it's whether they can push into that team. But yeah, I think there are going to be spots up to grab. One that I just want to mention before we move on, Steve Smith. I don't know if he'll be there. I think we've got to start looking for someone else. Keep him for one day and test. But anyway, we'll move on to our final topic. And I said it in the intro, this will be the last time that we talk about it. Ben Simmons has been traded to the Brooklyn Nets. Finally, our man, he's gotten out of Philly. What was your initial reaction when you woke up, saw that he'd been traded?
It was pretty weird. I guess we'd spoken about that it was a possibility last week, but then it seemed to just happen quite quickly after everything that's gone on this season. And there wasn't, I guess, that much hype around it. As we spoke about, I guess it's something that's been, I guess, spread. It was a bit of a, you know, poorly kept secret that might be the possibility. So I guess when it happened, it just confirmed those rumours. And it is really good to see, I guess, you know, he was seen courtside in their game today. And there was also some really, you know, good media with, I saw Patty Mills in a press conference talk about, you know, how he's ready to get out there with Ben and he's going to support him and help him out despite everything that's, I guess, gone on with Ben Simmons, even to do with the Aussie team. So yeah, that's really cool to see, and hopefully he can get out there and make a little finals push maybe.
Definitely, definitely. But I'll explain the trade before we move on. So Simmons was packaged with Seth Curry, not Steph, Seth, and Andre Drummond for James Harden. So the former MVP will link up with Joel Embiid in Philadelphia. For me, both teams kind of won this trade. It's that classic, you know, both teams get better from the trade. And that's obviously what you want in every trade. It's not ideal every time because you might have a more valuable player that you're trading for someone less valuable. And I do think that's the case in this situation. James Harden is a better player than Ben Simmons, but it's that Ben Simmons brings an element to Brooklyn on the defensive end that they've been lacking. They need to score usually 120 a night in order to win. And we've seen them struggle to do that because up until today, where Simmons was sitting courtside, maybe he's just going to bring that winning mantra back. You know, sits courtside, they get the win. Because prior to that, they'd lost 11 straight games, which you don't get to see very often in the NBA. But for Simmons, he now gets to partner with KD and Kyrie occasionally since he is not vaccinated, just playing road games. Going to be exciting to see, as you said, Mills mentoring him, but then he gets some of the all-time greats in KD and Kyrie, you know, getting him familiar with how they play and how they think, and we'll see what that does to Simmons' game. But I know that I said it was kind of a level trade, but do you think that's the same, or do you think someone actually won this trade?
I think it's going to be interesting. Probably if we get to the end of the season and the Nets win, you know, the championship, they'd probably be pretty happy and say they probably won the deal. It's going to be interesting to see how Simmons can, I guess, impact straight away. He's had a huge time off the court, and, you know, whether he'll take a while to get into the flow of things again will be interesting. But, you know, as you say, he's going to link up with, you know, KD and the likes of that. Will probably take a lot of pressure off him, especially on the offensive end, which is where he has struggled in his career so far. And if he's allowed to just come in and focus on the defense to start with and allow himself to get back into the game that way, it could be a real positive thing for the Nets.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to have a positive effect on his play style. I mean, like, he's, like, just have to second what you said. He's going to be able to anchor their defense. He might play, you know, he did play the point guard for Philadelphia, but he might play, you know, because he is quite tall. I think he's 6'9", 6'10". Like, he is quite tall. So he'll probably get to play a bit of the center role, maybe a bit of the power forward, and play on the interior. And we'll have to see how that change of scenery works for him. But I'm very excited for Ben Simmons. You know, I feel like a lot of people gave him some unnecessary slack. Some was necessary. He did deserve some backlash for missing the Olympics, and but for sitting out, you got to do what's best for him. So he won't be back on the court immediately. He's still working on his mental health and all that kind of stuff, which is great. But we hope to see him out on the court. But how exciting would it be if we go to June, July, when the finals are, which is so far away to think about. But we skip forward to then. Patty Mills and Ben Simmons are NBA champions together. How much would that mean for Australian basketball?
Yeah, it would be a huge thing. I think Australian basketball is, you know, in a real good spot at the moment. Obviously, you know, riding that wave off a medal in Tokyo, and then, you know, players improving always, the Australian presence in the NBA, guys like Josh Giddey, Patty Mills. It would cap off a pretty incredible kind of 18 months for Patty Mills.
Yeah.
You know, if he was to win a championship. And hopefully, you know, he can get in Simmons' ear a little bit, and Simmons can, you know, come over for the Boomers as well and have an impact there.
Fingers crossed. But Blaze, that will do us for episode 35 of the Practice Drill. As I said in the introduction, go and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at @T_practice drill to stay up to date on all things NRL, AFL, rugby union, cricket, and NBA basketball. Blaze, until next week, what are you looking forward to?
I'll be actually heading out to Parramatta on Friday night to watch that season opener.
Oh, the Tars game? Yeah.
So hopefully that's a really good game, and you know, I'm not really sure who I'm supporting, to be honest, so I just hope for a good game.
All right, well, and also just at the end, because I know they want to hear it, shout out to my cricket team, Concord Briars, C-grade. They found out that I actually do this podcast, and they were giving it to me. So shout out to them. Good bunch of blokes, and let's go win the chip this year. But anyway, till next week, enjoy your sport, and we'll speak to you then.
See ya.